shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry, Auto Racing.
All right, and it is the Phil Hendry Show here every night to every night till 1 o'clock at the West Coast, 4 a.m. in Tampa. That's right, WWBA 820 AM. We're on the air in Tampa. We're on the air in a lot of places. But we are at present and for the foreseeable future, to use the French pronunciation as Margaret does.
Phil, don't mock the way I speak. I do this for a reason. To educate and to culture, C-U-L-T-U-R-E. What does that spell, bud?
Culture.
No, you're wrong.
He's right.
No, he's wrong. It spells culture. Culture. Bud, try it.
Culture.
Oh, what a... Boy, I'll tell you. You know, now I know why lockjaw, why God invented lockjaw for you.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say. I can't even pronounce what you're saying.
You can't pronounce with the kid what I'm saying?
I can't pronounce what you want this kid to say. Culture. 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 Anyway, we're on the air in Tampa at, and I just want to say that. We're on the air in Tampa at WWBA 820 AM. There. I said it, and I'm happy that I said it. Thank you. And we will continue to post these notices as we see fit. Thank you so very deeply. Is that Lauren Green from Fox News?
No, that's Harris Faulkner.
Oh, boy, is she gorgeous.
You got that right.
She is a beautiful woman at Harris Faulkner. A beautiful woman. All right, welcome back to the Phil Hendry Show here. 877-876-PHIL, online at philhendryshow.com. And Twitter and Facebook and all that there, man. What's going on, man? Did this game play tonight? No. We told you that the Blackhawks beat the Bruins. The world's oldest person has died. Now, this was a story that we had featured earlier in the month, I think, or it might have been last month, that the world's oldest person existed in Japan. Well, just as soon as we give you the news, now the world's oldest person has died. Japan's Jiromon Kimura, who had been recognized by the Guinness World Book as the world's oldest living person and the oldest man ever. Does that mean that there was a woman that was older?
That's the oldest man that ever was.
Okay. Does that mean there was an older woman?
What does that mean?
What it means is if they're specifying that it was the oldest man ever, then there must have been a woman who was older.
Why do you think that?
Never mind, bud.
Bud, are you always this dumb, or is it just the hour?
I don't know.
All right. Kimura of Kyotango, Japan... was born...
Let me see that. Kimura Kyotango, Japan.
Give me that back, grabbing that from me.
Here, I'll do it. Kimango...
Give me that.
No. Kumo...
If anybody grabs this news copy from me one more time, they're going to get this right fist right down their throat, okay?
Bud, sounds like something you'd enjoy.
No, you would. You like to have a beer.
Watch it.
Kimura of Kyotango, Japan, was born April the 19th in 1897. Officials in Kyotango said he died in a local hospital where he'd been undergoing treatment for pneumonia. According to Guinness, Kimura was the first man in history to have lived to 116 years of age. Well, how do they know that?
Well, they don't, Phil, but according to recorded records.
The oldest man in history... I thought those people in Georgia lived a long time. Not Georgia the state, but Georgia the country.
I'm not familiar.
Apparently there was a story that was very oft repeated and circulated for a while, and it might have been horse dung, and if it was, boy, oh boy, there was a yogurt company, or maybe it wasn't a yogurt company.
Oh, yeah, the yogurt company said that people lived to be like 130 or something. No, they didn't, man. They didn't say 130, but they said really old.
Yeah, in the country of Georgia... the people were said to live a long time because they ate this yogurt, okay?
Well, what kind of yogurt?
It was made there in Georgia. It's a yogurt that is made from the cows and the milk products, the dairy products, from that region of the world. And the inference was that if you eat a lot of yogurt, and I think it was being used by one of the yogurt companies.
Well, which one, Phil? I've got to know.
I don't know. Danone, one of them.
Well,
you don't know which yogurt company is. What difference does it make?
Because it's something I think I'd like to try.
Oh, are you telling me that you believe this horse dung? I mean, it's who knows if it's true?
Well, Phil, we can't afford...
What is it with you? You all afraid? What, are you afraid of dying?
Yes, I am.
Wait a minute. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm fine. It's just... I'm feeling my mortality.
Margaret, take it easy, will you?
Bill, you know that I'm 2 years away from being 60. You just turned 60. What was it like?
Take it easy, Miss Gray. You want me to go get you a bubble up?
I don't want a bubble up, thank you.
Not a bubble up. You mean a 7-Up?
Whatever.
Yeah, I turned 60. What about it?
Well, you realize that that is that it's a devastating age. People are going to think things. People are going to act a certain way. You've had it tough up to this point, Phil. It's going to be near impossible for you to get work after this.
Well, you know what? I don't give a damn. How about that? I just don't. I'm going to go on and do as best as I can, and I'm going to have fun and whatever.
And you don't mind it if people call you old man and all of that?
People are going to do what they're going to do. People are going to do what they're going to do, you know? That is the mark of a small mind, a very itsy-bitsy mind, to call you old man or old woman.
How small?
Oh, about that. What do you mean, how small? I'm talking about it's the work of a person that doesn't have a very broad view of life, and that's their cheap shot. Anybody that takes cheap shots, anybody that says that kind of stuff, they have one thing in mind. A, they want to hurt you, and those things do hurt, but they also are betraying a decided inability to really, you know, show insight. If all they can say about you is you're old, they have no real insight into who you are. They have no real insight into not only what's good about you, but what's bad about you. So they just go for the cheap insult. And it also shows that they're angry. And when people are angry, it generally means they themselves are hurt by something that you did.
Hey, all right, Mr. Henry.
Thank you.
Well, I don't get it.
Take it easy, will you? You got a husband. You're worried about you. You got a husband that doesn't know whether it's a he or a she or an it.
Let's get off of Frank and let's get back on me. And don't you take that the wrong way, bud.
Well, you're basically opening the door.
No, I wasn't.
Well, take it easy. What?
No, never mind.
You know, I hate it when you interrupt the show with this stuff and oh, never mind.
I said never mind. Let it drop.
God.
Yes, ma'am. Anyway, the world's oldest person, 116 years of age. It was held by another Japanese, 115-year-old Misao Okawa of Osaka. Wait a minute. It was held by Misao Okawa of Wakawa.
It was held by Misao Okawa.
Let me do it. It was held...
Yeah, I'll do it. It was held by the Okawa without...
Give me that. Don't take that from my hands. It was held by Misao Okawa. Wow.
Are you guys all mentally ill? It was held by Misao Okawa of Osaka.
Well, how are you able to do that?
Mr. Henry's an announcer. He knows how.
Right. Some of you guys forget, you know, that who the professional is here. You know, you've been talking on microphones for so long. People have been telling you, oh, Margaret, you know, let me get your opinion. And all you guys are amateurs, man. I'm the pro, huh? Huh?
Yes, sir, Mr. Henry.
Yes, all right.
I'm the pro. You guys are all along for the ride. I'm the professional. I know how to say this stuff good. 115-year-old Misao Okawa Misao Okawa of Osaka. Okawa was born March 5th, 1898. And, man, that was way back when, man. They had covered wagons and guys spitting into spittoons and stuff.
In Japan?
Well... Anyway, she was the world's oldest living woman. All right, now I'm really confused. If the oldest living person... The oldest living person is now 115-year-old Misao Okawa. She was born, and she's also the world's oldest living woman. Mr. Kimura was an exceptional person, said Craig Glenday, editor-in-chief of Guinness World Records and Old Guys in Japan. I'm kidding. Craig Glenday of Guinness World Records, as the only man to have ever lived for 116 years and the oldest man whose age has been fully authenticated, he has a truly special place in world history. Kyotengo officials said Kimura's funeral would be held Friday. It would be a long procession featuring the military, a brass band, jets flying overhead. Kidding.
That's so disrespectful, Phil. Why would you say that about that man?
What was disrespectful about that? I was just, you know, making up. It would be nice if they did that.
Yeah, it didn't mean no disrespect. They're not like they're going to bust out the jets from some old guy, old fossils going west. Why, the other day...
Never mind, bud. We get it. Mr. Kimura was and will always be a treasure to our town, to our country, and to our world. And as a treasure, we're going to stick him back in the mountain where he came from, said Mayor Yasushi Nakayama as he dug into another box of popcorn. There you go.
Well, I think that's lovely, and a tip of the cap to the wonderful people of Japan, the regimen that they follow, the health regimen, the yogurt, and I do want to get the address of the yogurt manufacturer.
No, I don't know the yogurt. In Georgia?
Yes.
No, I don't know who it is. I'm just saying that they eat a lot of yogurt.
Well, whoever it is and wherever you are, to all the yogurt and to all the people that eat yogurt. And this man, Kimura, didn't eat yogurt. Is that right?
Right.
Well, then...
Never mind.
Yeah, I don't know. Why was I wasting my time?
All right, we'll be right back, folks, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more of this scintillating news.
Truth is our bitch.
The Phil Hendry Show. Yogurt? With it, I think it's ridiculous. Okay,
I'm gonna talk about it,
David.
Yeah,
David.
Yeah.
So this is a syphilis report. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a syphilis report that we're trying to. In other words, what we want to do is make this as educational as possible, but we don't want to panic people, and we want to, create an atmosphere where we can give people information.
All right, I don't approve of it.
Well, Phil, it's not your call, all right? I've already talked to David about this.
It's not my call. You know, it's a hell of a thing for you to say. It's not my call. It's a hell of a thing for you to say. It's my show. That's what it is. And I think that I should have some say in how these things go about. I mean, there was a number of years... What is it with the music?
Time for the syphilis report.
Hello, everybody. I'm Margaret Gray, and it's time for your syphilis report. Well, guess where syphilis has now reared its ugly head on the Big Island of Hawaii? This is your syphilis report, but...
Time now on a syphilis report.
Yes, 5 cases of syphilis were reputed... We're going to have to cut that again. I like reputed more than reported, but that doesn't mean the same thing, does it?
No, it doesn't, Ms. Gray. You have to change it up. Change the thing.
All right.
Turn that off!
Yeah, I knew he wouldn't go for it.
Well, Phil, it's out of your hands. David's already proved it.
Why do we got to hear this jackass music behind this? That's the Benny Hill theme.
On account it relaxes people.
Everything around here is relaxes people. This is what I notice about this show and everything that we do in the show. It's got to relax people. I don't care if we're talking about the death of children, if we're talking about people dying in a tram accident, if we're talking about a terrorist act, everything's got to relax people. So now you've got this syphilis report. Whose idea was that?
It was, excuse me, I was belching. Is that all right?
You don't have to bring it up.
That's cute. Don't have to, write that down, bud.
You're belching, I don't have to bring it up.
yes, I did. It's a belch. What I'm saying is this. Oh, who cares what? Just go ahead, bud, please.
Now Margaret Gray.
Hello, everybody. It's the syphilis. What did you do?
I want to know. What is the purpose? I understand it relaxes people playing that goofball music. Is there all of a sudden a need to talk about syphilis?
Phil, last night on these very airwaves, you were talking about gonorrhea this, gonorrhea that, gonorrhea a book, gonorrhea the sign. Never mind, bud, and so on and so forth.
I was talking about propaganda posters from World War II.
Yes, you were. Well, guess what? Now we're dealing in reality, because as much as those posters may have worried people back in World War Dos, this is very real, Phil. It's a very real concern, and should concern all of us. It should concern all of us parents. Do you have any children in preschool?
No, I do not.
Do you have any children in grade school?
No, my kids are all up and out of the house.
Well, some of us still have children that are in school, and I think this syphilis report could be something that...
What has syphilis got to do with a kid in grade school?
It gets the parents' attention. Bud, go. Hello, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray with today's syphilis report. We've got 5 cases on the Big Island. How dare you take my news copy from me?
Thank you very much for the syphilis report, Margaret.
I'm not through with you.
Yeah, uh-huh. And you, bud, you being a part of this.
I didn't mean to. He told me I had to play the music and make sure it relaxed people.
That music doesn't relax anybody.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you that, man.
What are you talking about? It's funny and everything. Look, here. Ah, boy, I'm Sullivan.
Get out of here. Ah.
It does. It relaxes me.
If he says it relaxes him.
If he says it relaxes him, there's something wrong with it. Hello, everybody. I'm Margaret Gray with the Syphilis Report.
Phil, you turn everything into something ugly. You would show Phil Hendry something that a blind man has worked on his entire life, and he'll lift his leg to it.
No, I will not.
Why did you? That was perfect music, bud.
Hey, Miss Gray, that was great.
Thank you.
Okay, so you got your little shot in. Show Phil something that a blind man has worked on all of his life, and he'll lift his leg to it. And what do you call that?
I call that informing people with a smile. I'm Margaret Gray, and it's time to inform... Bud, get the music. I'm going to show you, Phil. Hi, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray, informing you with a smile. Syphilis.
No. No. Sorry. Not going to work. Not on my watch.
Oh, get a load of you. You're suddenly standing on the West Wall, are you?
Yeah. 1984 book sales are up amid surveillance reports. Now, here you go. This is beautiful. I'm going to tell you this, just my opinion, and I'm not going to go into a big, long song and a dance, because I don't even want to talk about it. This whole NSA thing is the biggest load in the history of the universe. It is the most trumped up, most overblown bunch of garbage that has been loaded in and then taken to the street and then dumped that I've ever heard of. And having said that, the country's book buyers are now reading up on being watched. Get a load of this, man. We're talking about something that is being done by the government at the, quite frankly, at the with the approval of the American people through their Congress, the Patriot Act. It's been turned into a political issue because it's all about Obama. Forget about whether Bush was involved in any of this. And I'm not saying that, you know, I want to indict one president over the other. So it's ridiculous. So now people are buying 1984. Apparently, the sales of George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World have been strong since news broke last week that the U.S. government had vast surveillance programs targeting phones and internet records like they've had for years and years and years and years. Several editions of Orwell's 1984 about an all-seeing government were among Amazon.com's top 200 sellers as of Wednesday morning. Huxley's story of a mindless future ranked number 210 and was out of stock. Well, I don't doubt that it's out of stock. That book is always going to sell. A perennial favorite of futuristic horror, Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 was ranked number 75. Of course, Fahrenheit 451 is about a society that burns all of its books, and we don't need the NSA, and we don't need the surveillance program of the NSA to know that people aren't reading books. All you gotta do is go on Facebook, okay? And when you go to Facebook, take a look at people's profiles. Take a look at their likes and their, you know, do you ever do that?
Yes, you can go in and look at their likes and their dislikes and...
Yeah.
Okay. And there's always a category for movies, television, and music, and then there's a category for books. And I'm telling you, you look at the movies and you look at the television, they got 50 million movies and 85 million TV shows, and this, go down to books, they got like maybe two listed, and one of them is bloody damn well Harry Potter.
Well, what are you saying? People aren't reading?
A little bit, yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. And what they do read is garbage. People are reading fiction. You should not read fiction. I am here to tell you.
Now, wait just a minute, Phil.
No, wait. This is my show. This is my editorial opinion. Do not read fiction. I repeat, do not read fiction. 1984, yeah, that's fine. And Brave New World, fantastic. 1984 by Orwell, I've read it three times. The book is about Orwell's take on a post-World War II view that the communist state, the socialist state, was now looming large. It was the golem of civilization, and the West had to stand strong because what it did represent was exactly this kind of totalitarian society, totalitarian controlled society, where nobody had any personal freedom, where everyone was watched, and where everyone was expected to work like a little worker ant for the greater good. And as you know, that lasted until around 1990. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What did?
The communist thing, man.
The communist thing, man. Phil, this isn't a beatnik poetry reading.
Phil Hendry.
We've been looking at this auto race, Bud. Thank you very much for that, Bud, but I don't think we have to look at any more auto racing, do we?
No, don't take it down.
But thank you. That was the Spanish Grand Prix on Phil TV. So, getting back to what we were talking about here, 1984 by Aldous, 1984 by George Orwell is a big seller. People are buying that book. Now, 1984, if you've read it, and I have, is a book about, it's obvious that it's a book about the very worst possible excess and the worst possible repression of a Stalinist, Marxist-Leninist state. What George Orwell foresaw as the worst possible outcome of Great Britain and hence the Western world not being vigilant at keeping this communist onslaught out of Europe. What would happen? It would become a worker bee state, everybody assigned a number, everybody assigned a place to live, everybody given a job, just as the communist system promised, and in the process dehumanizing everyone. And he went even further. He said that not only does it give you the same job and it gives you the same place to live and it gives you the same things to wear, but also they're going to begin to control your thinking so that we don't have any more of this troublesome counter-revolutionary behavior. And how did he do it? Well, he did it, Orwell did it, in a way that we're doing to ourselves right now. And Orwell didn't do it. He was saying that the society of the future would do it. The society of the future, in Orwell's opinion, would limit words. It would limit words. It would limit the way words were used. It would limit the number of words we could use. It would make words reflective of things that they ordinarily wouldn't be. For instance, in 1984, in this futuristic society, the word love was eliminated from the dictionary, from the English language. There is no word love. Instead, the word replacing it was unhate. So,
what's that mean?
You unhate somebody. Oh, I unhate you.
So, in other words, there's no word love.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, no word love.
Well, I don't know, Phil. When's this supposed to take place?
What do you mean, when's it supposed to take place?
It's in the book. Aren't you listening to what he's saying?
Don't you yell at me.
Well, it's in the book. He's right. It's in the book.
What is?
I'm going to belt you, man. It's in the book 1984. So now you have unhate instead of love. So everything is off of the word hate. Everything's referenced off of that. Then you control history. Notice, history. What's the most dangerous thing in Orwell's future? What's the most dangerous thing in Orwell's future as we open onto this scene, as you open the book up and you begin to read, we see Winston Smith, the hero of this novel, and he's at this meeting, and they're all denouncing the enemy, some made-up guy named Goldstein, you know, nice Jewish name, nice Jewish terrible guy. And then he goes to work. And what are the things that Winston Smith is doing on behalf of the government in his job there at the Ministry of Bullcrap? It's the propaganda ministry. He's controlling the historical information, and he's making sure that words that should not be used are not used. Now, why is that important? Number one, we think with words. I know we speak with them, but we also think with them. We think with words. And if you limit the number of words that a person has at his disposal, you limit his ability to think about things. Sure, we see pretty pictures in our mind and we have dreams and all that bull crap, but when we're sitting and we're pondering and we're thinking, and they've eliminated words and they don't let us, and now we don't have that word anymore. Maybe our education is such that it's finally sunk in. Now we have a limited ability to think. And then the other thing he was controlling was history. He was eliminating from the newspapers and eliminating from any periodical that he would get there in his little cubicle, anything that the government didn't approve of. They controlled history, controlled information, but more importantly, controlled the history of people and events. That's why history is important. That's why when you hear Americans, especially, forgive me for saying, but younger Americans, but older Americans are the same.
Well, I don't really read history.
So the biggest threat to this country today is not the NSA. The biggest threat to the country today is not the information. It's not Bradley Manning. It's not WikiLeaks. It's not this. Not a, the biggest problem with this country, the biggest dictator alive, and the one that's hurting us the most is that person called the everyday man. It's you and me. We ain't reading. We don't read history. We don't have a vocabulary that's worth a damn. Every other word is F, MF, you know.
Well, you, speak for yourself.
No, not speak for myself. I mean, we are our own worst enemy. We think the government's doing it to us. Give me a break.
Are you telling me the government? They got guys that are going to do black ops and everything like that.
What about black ops?
What about black ops? What are you talking about, man?
Phil, you don't realize the government of the United States of America can observe and look. It can, you know, I'm going to say something that I would ordinarily reserve for you and your little friends here. They could put a microscope right up your...
Your?
Your butt.
He said butt.
Okay, fine. But you know what? The government and all of the American government, especially in all of its power and might and in all of our paranoia, they haven't got anywhere near the ability to look up our butt that we have with each other. And we're the ones that don't read. We're the ones that don't read history. We're the ones with the crap can vocabularies. We're the ones that don't vote. We're the ones that imagine all of these. I'm telling you, this NSA thing is, it makes me laugh. I laugh myself sick when I read about it because it shows just what a bunch of weak-minded clowns we've become.
Well, you're in big trouble now because you just called your audience weak-minded clowns. Bud, I think you should cue it.
You got it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray. It's time for Syphilis.
Get out of here with the Syphilis Report.
That's clown music.
Get out of here, will you? All right, I'm all done. By the way, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is a book. That's probably closer to the future that we're looking at. Because in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, there's a lot of genetic engineering. There's a caste system, and it's enforced by way of this genetic engineering. They have different castes from alpha all the way down to epsilon. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. Okay?
Now, what is that, like fraternities?
No, it ain't fraternities, man.
You know how big people, man, epsilon, a little tiny guy.
Yes, the alphas are the ones that run the society. The alphas are tall, strong, handsome, really smart. They're the presidents, they're the legislators, they're the brains, they're the ones that run the society. Then you have the betas, and the betas are like the middle management type of people, you know. If an alpha would be, I don't know what an alpha would be, because, you know, you got to imagine like an Aryan Superman combined with the brains of maybe Albert Einstein. Then you have the betas, and those are the middle management guys. Then the gammas, those become kind of the worker force, the strong kind of cats that, you know, are building freeways, all that crap. Then you have the deltas. Now you're getting down into the deltas are sort of like the secondary manual labor guys who are the worker bees, go to ball games, you know, drink a lot of beer, whatever. And then the epsilons are like the lowest of the low. These are dumbasses that are elevator operators. And, you know, they're picking up garbage by the side of the road, something like that. And this is all enforced from birth because you go into a laboratory and you see growing in these tubes, alphas, epsilon, all of them. Well, the book Brave New World is about one alpha who somehow during the gestation period there in the laboratory, somehow during his growth period as a fetus, too much alcohol was introduced into the system, and his growth is stunted.
Well, is he a little person?
I don't think so. I think he's maybe like 5'5" or 6", but he's an alpha. He has the same brains, he has the same, and he also has the same position, but he sees that he's different, and he's smaller, and he recognizes, and thus begins this thinking in this man. You know, he sort of, the world becomes clear to him. He sees the people around him, he sees these gammas, these epsilons, these deltas, he realizes that his world is unique. He is a alpha, and he has the brain and the prestige, but he also has the body of like a gamma or a delta.
And this is not a fraternity.
It ain't no fraternity, man. Are you listening to what I'm saying?
What, are you stupid or something, man?
The only gamma that I ever heard about was a bunch of guys there, and they threw up out of a window one time.
But this is not a fraternity.
It's a futuristic world that a man named Aldous Huxley came up with.
Who?
Aldous Huxley.
Who's that?
All right.
Come on, don't do it.
I'm going to kick his ass. Who's that? So in any event, that's the book, Brave New World. Go read it. It's fantastic. And, you know, like that. And they have in that book, just like in 1984, it seems to be a segment of the society that lives sort of on its own and lives in a relatively free manner. Like in 1984, there are the proles. That nobody goes into the prole part of town. That's short for proletariat, because those people can't be controlled. So they get to have their booze. They get to have their sex. They get to go where they want to go. But they're contained. Same thing in Brave New World, only they are Native American people. They're the Indians of North America and perhaps some other indigenous people elsewhere who the government doesn't even mess with them. They just let them do their thing because they've got their hands full. And this is where our hero of Brave New World, he escapes to that world. And
well, how does it all wind up?
I'm not telling you. I'm not going to give it away. People have been kicking my ass for giving stuff away over the years. I ain't doing it. But I would recommend that book, Brave New World. That's a kick-ass book. Bud Dickman?
Yes, sir.
Hello, everyone. I'm Phil Hendry, and this is your Brave New World Report. All right, anyway, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, of course, final segment of the program. And don't forget to look at our show log online at philhendryshow.com right after the show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
We've got a story here on the new film Killing Kennedy, and this is the West Wing actor. He's already been in the fictional White House on the West Wing, and now Rob Lowe will be in the real White House as the actor portrays America's 35th president, John F. Kennedy, in National Geographic's upcoming drama Killing Kennedy, as seen in the photo above. And for those of you who are on Phil TV, I'll give you a look here at Rob Lowe as John Kennedy. Well, maybe. I mean, they're making a case here.
Well, they're saying it's uncanny. I wouldn't say that.
No, I wouldn't either. But it's a very good, it's he looks more like Bruce Greenwood's version of Kennedy in that movie. What the hell was it? That lousy 13 Days?
What's that?
Oh, not the Kevin Costner? Oh, that was an abortion. Excuse my language, but it was a bloody abortion. I that film, 13 Days, it was almost as if there were bloody rubber gloves.
Well, okay, Margaret, I get the point. God.
What's your problem?
The whole image of bloody abortion, I get it.
Did you see it?
Yeah, not only did I see 13 Days, I walked out of it, yes.
Then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 13 Days. I remember Mr. Henry came back and goes, ah, God, what a waste of money.
Right. I did.
So you know what an abortion it was.
Well, can you knock it off with the abortion thing?
Why? You use it.
Yes, I do. But I don't go on to say bloody and rubber gloves.
Oh, boy, what a lightweight. All right. What the point that I'm making is that this film, 13 Days with Kevin Costner, was a stool sample. It came right out of the back end of a horse. It was, if you stepped in it, it would be warm and soft.
All right. All right, I can't take it anymore.
Should I go back to abortion?
No, we're all done talking about this movie 13 Days. Point is, it was a lousy movie. Now, Mr. Greenwood, who played Kennedy, when you look at the Rob Lowe, to me, it looks a little bit more like him. You know, it's a good, I wouldn't say it's uncanny. Give me a break. Who wrote this article? Some of you guys really need to, I don't know what you need to do, man. You need to find some way of writing, you know, interestingly without beating the freaking truth into the ground. This was written by Kimberly whatever the hell, who probably doesn't know Kennedy from, she wouldn't know Kennedy the president from Kennedy the MTV jock. Anyway, so as seen in the photo above, Lowe recreates an iconic pose from JFK's official White House portrait, the one where the president has his arms folded in front of me and he's sort of looking down, pondering all kinds of things. Lowe started production this week in Virginia on the Nat Geo film based on the best-selling book by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. Boy, I got to tell you something. I'm not going to read. I just don't want to read it, you know.
Well, why wouldn't you? You're into history, I thought.
I am, and I already read On the Trail of the Assassins, and I've already read Team of Rivals, and I don't need to read about Lincoln anymore, especially from the pen of Bill O'Reilly. And you'll pardon me if I don't read somebody else's version of history, not some pop icon like Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, you're just jealous because you didn't write it.
No, I'm not jealous.
Well, not even a little bit.
I don't even, not even interested in writing a book about Kennedy. What do you mean jealous? I don't care, but I got a problem with reading books written by TV hosts. You know, call me crazy.
You read a book by a guy that's, if it was about Bill O'Reilly.
What?
What are you talking about, Bud?
I'm saying that if the book was about Bill O'Reilly, you'd read it.
No, I wouldn't.
If it was written by Bill O'Reilly?
I still wouldn't read it because the guy does, he bores me to tears. So, no, I would not read it.
You've got a problem with Bill O'Reilly.
I don't have a problem. I'm saying that I'm not going to read a book, any book at all, written by what I consider to be a guy that is a glorified game show host. That's what I think of these guys. That's what I think of them.
What an insulting... So, in other words, what about Charles Krauthammer?
Charles Krauthammer, he makes his living as a writer. And by that, I mean he is not only writing, he's researching. He is formulating, in my opinion, a considered opinion based upon research and the fact that he has to engage readers, not just jackball sitting in front of a TV tray. So I rank him higher.
You rank him higher than who? Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah.
The man is in a wheelchair and looks as if he's got a pole. Ugh.
So what if he's in a wheelchair?
Yeah, it's not the same. You can't put Charles Krauthammer.
Joel Krauthammer.
What'd I say?
Krauthammer.
Well, Charles Krauthammer, you can't do that because Mr. O'Reilly would be disrespected.
I could give a sweet you-know-what if Mr. O'Reilly is disrespected. Charles Krauthammer, listen to you.
Oh, God.
Oh, Phil, get over yourself.
What does that mean, get over yourself? I don't...
Just lighten up.
I'm fine. What do you mean, get over yourself?
Yeah, talk about Charles Krauthammer.
If you say Krauthammer one more time, man, I'm going to show you Krauthammer. You want to see Krauthammer?
That sounds almost like you want to rape me.
Get him out of here before I kick his ass.
Come on, man.
What are you doing? Come on.
So, you drove Bud from the room, huh?
Yeah, and you're next. So, no thank you, I'm not reading the book. Now, moving along here before I throw up. So, Rob Lowe is going to play the president in this Nat Geo, if you'll pardon me for using the term Nat Geo. It is kind of shorthand and not very literate, but there you go. Joining the actor in the movie will be Once Upon a Time star... Who? Jennifer Goodwin as Jacqueline Kennedy... Michelle Trachtenberg in her first Russian-speaking role as Marina Oswald, and Will Rothar as Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm just kidding, Oswald. The JFK Project is Lowe's second National Geographic Channel project of the year. He also narrated April's miniseries, The 80s, The Decade That Made Us, which will spawn a sequel covering the 1990s. Boy, Rob Lowe is kicking some ass. Killing Kennedy is also Lowe's second big made-for-TV movie of the year, following the HBO Liberace movie Behind the Candelabra. Lowe played real-life plastic surgeon Jack Starts, who not only performed a major makeover on Liberace, but also performed procedures to make the piano superstar's much younger lover look just like Liberace. Wow, that's creepy. So there you have it. You know, I saw a film about Liberace. I saw a movie about Liberace. It was a documentary about Liberace, I should say, and it was about his estate, and it was about the man he was living with at the end of his... Oh, no, it was about Rock Hudson.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, there's a big difference. Sorry, I made a mistake, folks. About Rock Hudson.
Well, go ahead. You just pretend it's Liberace.
No, I won't pretend it's Liberace. It was Rock Hudson.
Well, then...
Here, it's about Rock Hudson.
No, just pretend it's Liberace, folks.
No, it's Rock Hudson. Now we're at the end of the...
Thank God. No one cares about Rock Hudson. People wanted to hear about Lee. Lee Liberace.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Lee at some future date. The Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry, in association with me, Phil Henry, and all of that. Join us online at philhenryshow.com for our backstage pass and get miles and miles and miles and hours and hours and hours of fantastic listening with your BSP baby. Until tonight at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock on the East Coast, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.